Two readings this morning, one from ancient text. We don't always use scriptural readings, but this time it seemed useful to us as we think about organizing. So a lot of times the scripture was written, at least in our Unitarian Universalist perspective, to figure out life, to make sense of, to make meaning of the world around them. And so here is at least my perspective of Genesis 11, some of the first few verses. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. And they said to each other, come, let's make bricks and let's bake them thoroughly. And they used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But God came down to see the city and the tower that people were building. And God said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. How cool is that? Now, that's not where the text ends. You may know that, you may not. The text in Genesis ends with God smashing the Tower of Babel, confusing the people and the languages, and sending people forth. There is a tradition, especially in medieval times, that went through all of the descendants that are listed in the book of Genesis, the descendants of Noah, to count up the different languages that must have existed after the Tower of Babel, at least 72. But I like that first part. Perhaps you do too. Once again, if as one people speaking the same language they can do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Imagine that world for a moment. Our second reading today is from a book entitled Going Public, by Michael Gacon. It's a book about community organizing and very particularly the style of community organizing that Voice does, the Voice that we're talking about today. There are two main sections to it, and so I'm going to tell you a little bit about their philosophy and then how they got started. First, he talks about power, the power that we seek in organizing. Gacon writes, when you say that you seek power, want power, you are heading into terra incognita, unknown land. You are no longer a do-gooder, holding hands with your siblings, singing kumbaya. You aren't an earnest private in a volunteer army looking to paint a fence or a chance to just help those in need. You're not satisfied with access to power. This isn't the power to abuse others or to dominate, not the power to replace the last bully with a new bully that you like, not the power to keep others from entering, but the power to demand recognition and reciprocity and respect, the power to create and sustain meaningful public relationships. Of course, then you stop being a spectator, a critic, or a high-minded activist. You get off the couch and out of the stands. You enter the arena and place yourself squarely in the mix as a fellow owner of what may or may not happen, as someone willing to be held accountable, not just hold others accountable. You become more engaged, more suspect, more threatening, and more exposed. But it's all just talk, this use of the word power, just like so many other rhetorical claims, unless it's reinforced by the habit and practice of organizing. That's why when we are called by the neighborhood or religious leaders of a city, we tell them that we won't come to solve a housing problem or an education problem or a wage problem. We'll come to fix a power problem. He goes on to say that that's what a certain man named Ed Chambers did. He said Ed Chambers was an occasionally gruff and blustery director of the Industrial Areas Foundation, which you may have heard of. That's the basis of our organizing group here. So Chambers went into East Brooklyn in the 70s when it was rough, when there were gunshots every night, fire, abandonment, and rubble. In the words of one visitor, another mayor, it looked like the beginning of the end of civilization. The leaders that met with Ed Chambers that day were eager, even desperate, to do something, anything, now, today. Chambers heard the leaders out. Then he told them precisely what they did not want to hear. Forget the issues. Don't pick a galvanizing cause. Avoid charismatic leadership. Instead, he urged them to take the time to recruit more congregations and associations in the area so that it would reflect the racial and religious and social and gender diversity of the community. He preached financial independence, and only after they raised money together, even from people who had none, could they move forward. He hammered away, get allies, pay dues, train leaders, don't do for others what they can do for themselves. Some in the group grumbled. Some believed that they were always working and that they squirmed and fumed and rebelled, that this wouldn't work. Without an issue or a cause or a crisis, no one would act, no one would move, and no one would work. This period devoted to building a powerful and durable base, what's called a sponsoring committee phase in IAF training, is what most organizations, churches even, tend to skip or forget or give short shrift. But it's precisely that, it's during those months and years that relationships form, that a community can begin to develop new depth and new breadth, and something holy and special is made. In the nearly 20-plus years, well, at the point of that book, it was 20-plus years, it's now 30 years, some of the same leaders who were doubtful in that moment have seen this organization move to make $400 million worth of difference in East Brooklyn. They've seen churches and organizations move to help. They've seen the whole neighborhood shift, and so there's no longer blight, because these leaders were not protesters or partisans. They weren't there to be victims, but rather to create community. They succeeded in unexpected ways and in unexpected places by relating to one another. And perhaps that's our calling today. I invite you to think about that and how it is we do that as Unitarian Universalists during our offering. Each Sunday we take an offering to do the work of the church, which is about more than our adult education programs, about more than what we do in social justice, but it's about relating to one another. We do this offering and our work in a spirit of generosity and in the service of that love and justice in the world. This morning's offering will now be taken and gratefully received. Stephen Schick tells the story of Patria Jimenez, the first out gay lesbian person in the Mexican Congress, who, upon being elected to Congress, had to lead a march into an openly hostile territory. He writes, she had good reason to fear leading that march. In a 2-year period, 25 transgendered people had been assassinated in the community. Our voices can rise when we are afraid, or they can become mute. But her voice, well, it rang clear. She chose neither to become too loud or too silent, but to speak as clearly as she could. She said that her ability to do this came from knowing that she was not alone, and that each time she acts in the face of her fear, the movement for equality advances a little. When, with courage, we take strong action with others, our fears can disappear and our voices can be heard more clearly. One of the great gifts of our faith is our commitment to creating a community week in and week out where we ask people to lift their voice in service of their faith, whether it's through music or through speaking or sharing stories over coffee. This, too, is a guiding principle of community organizing, a way of capitalizing on one of the greatest elements of raw power that exist, relationships. When people reflect on their experience, share it with one another, and then work to change the world for the better, seemingly impossible things are made possible. We can reach the heavens. There are countless tales, but they're often untold, of people finding their voices, which is a hard enough task in a world where we are told too often that we do not matter. There are countless tales, still often untold, of people using their voices. And those can be awe-inspiring, like Patria Jimenez's, and they can be daunting sometimes because of that fear, but they can also be comforting and life-changing. And so this morning, I wanted you to hear one of our own share her story of finding and using her voice in connection with others to make the world a better place. So I'm inviting Joan Woolery to come and share some of her thoughts. Thank you, Joan. There is, I admit, so much I wish I could say, and so little time in which I can convey the message. Almost a year ago, as I endured some sleepless night in Omaha, Nebraska, I thought of how important it was to learn the lessons of our community organizing group here in Voice, and I looked forward to the ministry I would have here, even while I was out there. Now, admittedly, I knew that I could play to your strengths as a church, being such a musical congregation, and I'm so smart, too, that I knew you would enjoy the little play on words I use for today's lesson. Voice lessons, right? That was good. It's one of the few times I could get these little blurbs down to something short and pithy, so I enjoyed that with you I could do this. But what would those lessons be? There are literally so many that it can be hard to tidy them up. So first, some business. What is Voice? It's the Virginians Organized for Interfaith Community Engagement. I've talked to you of some of its principles and organization. Saul Alinsky in the beginning kind of did this work about organizing, and if that loses you because of your political or fiscal perspective, I hope that you'll come back for a moment. Trust me where I'm going with this. Alinsky, regardless of his your political stripes or his, taught a way of making a difference in our country that has resulted in considerable change in many directions. For instance, both the Tea Party leaders and people in Green parties across the country give his book, Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, to their leaders as a tool for educating them about activism. Now that is cross-partisan work, right? That's amazing. This book has made a change in our nation, and it's affected our local community because his lesson primarily is the importance of relationships, that we can affect change because there are two sources of power in our world. One is money, and the people in this room, so far as I know, don't have all the money in the world, but the other source of power are people. We have a lot of people. So for Voice, that's the guiding principle, that people and money are sources of power and we can leverage whichever of the two we have to make change. And so we encourage Virginians of all types to meet together and talk about our lives and how we can improve our communities. I would imagine that Voice would agree with UU Minister Eric Williams with this quote. He writes, "The world is too beautiful to be praised by only one voice. May we have the courage to sing our parts. The world is too broken to be healed by only one set of hands. May we have the courage to use our gifts." One of the lessons of Voice is that it is not up to the leader, the staff of Voice, the minister of a church, anyone to do the work, but that we walk the path together. I feel honored and privileged that so many people would help lead this worship today. But that is Voice and Unitarian Universalism in action. We demonstrate our principles of shared leadership day in and day out. We think that we can make the world a better place by using our gifts. In many communities where there's an organization like Voice and a UU church, those two work closely because their values parallel so clearly. Both are communities that welcome and intentionally seek diversity. Both seek to make the world a fairer place. In fact, both actually encourage a healthy sense of distrust of authority and sense of just giving it to the man when it's time. There are some differences. Voice has a good set of principles when it comes to meeting. I've experienced this a number of times, given my issues with timeliness. Voice is intent on starting on time and ending on time. I am aware of the clock, and I will try to abide by that principle. But there's also usually a question between both organizations, community organizing and churches, about what the organization's mission and vision is in the world, and what part every single person will play in both setting and living that out. And sometimes, in each case, there's a disconnect. Sometimes we look at groups like Voice and we say, what are they doing? They. As if they are disconnected from us. As if we have no role or no responsibility in helping them achieve its work in the world. And sometimes we look at Brew and we say, what are they doing? They. As if they are disconnected from us. As if we have no role or no responsibility in helping Brew achieve its work in the world. One of the lessons from IAF organizing that is amazingly applicable to our own church is the piece of achieving buy-in and what to do with it. This is why Michael Gacon talks so much about relationships. He goes on to talk about buying into the organization first. You heard about that in part, and how everyone just kind of rebelled and fussed and everything at the beginning. We need an issue. We need to grab people, they said. And this group said, wait. Have them buy in first to the group, to the people, to the vision that this community can mean something, and then we'll see what we need to tackle. When we look at Voice or Brew or anything as a means to solve our problem, it may work momentarily, but it will almost always let us down. When we begin to see ourselves as part of the bigger picture, however, as having a voice and helping other people find their voice rather than just needing to be heard, then we can make a real difference. When I started going to my home UU church, I felt like I had no voice. I hadn't grown up in the church. I wasn't very old. I hadn't spent a lot of time there. And so after a few months, I stopped going. I simply felt disconnected, disempowered. And eventually, though, I talked to the minister about it. And I wondered what they might do to draw me back in. And the minister really guided me to a good truth, which was that it wasn't his job to draw me back in. He pointed out that I should start meeting with some people after lunch, join a small group, or just talk to people, build some relationship, and that might connect me. And believe it or not, that's what did it. Voice often works on the principle of one-on-one relational meetings, that we sit down and we talk to one another about our lives, but it means taking a risk. I end this morning with a poem from Vaclav Havel, who encourages us to take that risk. He writes, "It is I who must begin. Once I begin, once I try, here and now, right where I am, not excusing myself by saying things would be easier elsewhere, without grand speeches or ostentatious gestures, but once I begin, all the more persistently to live in harmony, as I understand harmony, as soon as I do that, I discover, to my surprise, that I am neither the only one, nor the first, nor the most important one to have set out upon the road of life. Whether all is really lost or not depends entirely on whether or not I am lost." And that's how it is with anything. Whether Voice is successful, whether Brew is successful, or our schools, or our government, our families, or whatever, really depends on whether or not we are willing to begin, whether or not we feel that we are lost or willing to be present. The world is too beautiful to be praised by only one voice. Eric Williams is right. Don't let those other voices dominate. May we have the courage to sing our parts. The world is too broken to be healed by only one set of hands. May we have the courage to use our gifts. Amen, and blessed be.